Good morning. My name is Todd Davies, and I'm the Associate Director of the Symbolic Systems Program here at Stanford. I'd like to welcome all of you on behalf of Symbolic Systems and our co-host, the Center for the Study of Language and Information at Stanford. The Center for the Study of Language and Information, or CSLI, is an independent research laboratory here on campus. It was founded in 1983 to bring together researchers at Stanford and nearby laboratories to study human and machine intelligence and the problems common to both of them. Symbolic Systems is an interdepartmental program founded in 1986, just 3 years after CSLI's founding. SimSys, as it is affectionately known, turned the research problems that sparked CSLI into a degree-granting academic curriculum, borrowing courses from departments such as computer science, philosophy, linguistics, and psychology, and occasionally adding a few of our own. Today's event, the Singularity Summit, is the latest in a series of special events that the Symbolic Systems Program has hosted on campus, focusing on connections between our curriculum and the issues of the wider world. We have hosted, usually co-hosted, at least one such major event each year since 2000, and have also devoted a significant number of our weekly Symbolic Systems Forum lectures to this theme. Seeing that the pattern was consistent, we decided to give this series of events a name, Symposiums on Symbolic Systems and Society, and has a page on our website, simsys.stanford.edu. This year's symposium is really a sequel to the first event in the series, held 6 years ago and also co-hosted with CSLI. It was titled, Will Spiritual Machines Replace Humanity by 2100? And featured, among others, Ray Kurzweil and Douglas Hofstadter, both of whom will appear on stage today. The other major events in the series have focused on issues such as digital divides across race, class, and gender, internet policy, uses of new media in labor unions, and e-democracy. Today's summit touches on vital questions posed by the prospect of augmenting and perhaps even replacing human intelligence. The summit is occasioned by the recent publication of the book The Singularity is Near by our keynote speaker, Ray Kurzweil. In his book, Ray Kurzweil says that the singularity is, quote, a future period during which the pace of technological change will be so rapid, its impact so deep, that human life will be irreversibly transformed. Although neither utopian nor dystopian, this epoch will transform the concepts that we rely on to give meaning to our lives, from our business models to the cycle of human life, including death itself. Throughout the day, a number of prominent speakers, let me see on the stage, with different points of view, will comment on this and related ideas, culminating at the end of the day with a roundtable discussion and audience participation. I imagine there are many in the audience who are, like me, a bit unsure what to think about the singularity idea. Technology that augments human abilities can be used either to attenuate or to amplify existing inequalities. It might even have opposite effects in different societies. It could benefit humanity and the planet as a whole, or it could wipe out humanity. One could argue that getting rid of humanity would be a bad thing, but some argue it would be a good thing. An understandable reaction to the notion of singularity is to assume that it is science fiction and unlikely to happen in our lifetimes. But if we think about the quote I just read, I'm struck by how powerfully it seems to describe events that have already happened. One of the latest such events is the advent of ubiquitously available communication technology and information about other people through things like online social networks. Think for a moment about how much of our cultural practices and our literary heritage are based on assumptions that these new technologies undermine. That it is often impossible to contact someone, that one must cultivate relationships in order to gain information about people, that one's physical appearance must carry a heavy burden of telling strangers about one's personality. Basic propositions about the social world that have been true throughout human history are suddenly becoming false, and many of us wonder whether our life experiences and our favorite old movies, say from the 1990s, have much relevance to this new reality. Disruptive changes like this may help us to prepare for the kind of event horizon that Ray Kurzweil and others invite us to consider, a world in which advances in technology are no longer under human control. I hope we will all think critically, but with an open mind, about what we hear today and that we will challenge our illustrious panelists to share with us their deepest motivations, hopes, and dreams. For now, at least, the singularity looks to be something that is in human hands, and that is why we convene this summit. Now I'd like to present both the primary sponsor and the primary organizer of today's event, Peter Thiel and Tyler Emerson, who will introduce our keynote speaker.
Hello, everyone. So I'm Tyler Emerson, Executive Director of the Singular Institute. I'm going to come out here because I don't like podiums. So I'm just here to make a few quick general announcements for you to let you know how things are going to run today. We have a 15-minute break, which will be after Nick Bostrom at 10:40 a.m. We're going to have a one-hour lunch. We're recommending that you stay very close because the campus is packed with 30,000-plus people for the powwow. We're selling $7 lunches, exit left to the right. Stay around here. It's going to take a lot of time to get you guys out and in. And let's see. No cell phones. Please turn them off. No food, no drinks. And real quickly, we are achieving something that has really never been done here before. Ray Kurzweil and I, where is Ray? There you are. We began working on this in November 2005, and it has just exploded. I hope we have a really remarkable discussion. I've never seen a panel of this nature before on these topics. And I just want to introduce Peter real quick. He is he's on the board of advisors for my institute, the Singular Institute for Artificial Intelligence. Peter is the former CEO of PayPal, a little-known company. He is one of the early founders or early investors of Facebook, and he is heading up a $2 billion global macro hedge fund in San Francisco that has also gone through a recursive process that he experienced at PayPal. It's pretty extraordinary what they're accomplishing over there. So, Peter, the moderator. Thanks.
Tyler, thank you very much for that introduction. We have an incredible lineup of speakers today, so I'm going to try to keep the introductions very short. I just wanted to say a few words about how I came to this, became at least a quasi-convert to the idea of the singularity. And goes back to the my first encounter with this goes back to the 1980s, 1990s, when I was in junior high school, college here at Stanford, and very actively involved in scholastic chess. And I remember 1980, seventh grade, I was at a chess tournament in, a few miles south of here in Saratoga. And the former world chess champion, Max Oiwe, told several hundred people there that computers would, of course, never be as good as humans at chess. They would never even be as good as sort of an expert-level player because chess required a degree of ingenuity and thought and creativity that no computer could ever replicate. And, you know, as the years went by, the computers steadily got better, although they still seemed to be sort of clunky, good at tactics, good at sort of brute force calculation. By 1988, when I was on the Stanford chess team as an undergraduate, they started to get to be roughly on par with chess master level. But still, there was a sense that they'd never be as good as a grandmaster. By the mid-90s, they started to get even stronger. And in sort of a very famous match in 1996 between IBM's Deep Blue and Garry Kasparov, where Kasparov perhaps prematurely declared that he was going to defend the dignity of the human race. The computer managed to beat him by fairly narrow, 3.5 to 2.5. And of course, there were all the standard postmortems that this was just, he was psyched out by the machine, it wasn't really playing as well as he normally did, and so on. But I think there's sort of an interesting postmortem to it, which people don't fully realize, which is the computers have just kept getting stronger and stronger and stronger. And just last year, there was a match between the Hydra 12, doesn't sound like a very, sounds fairly formidable, chess computer and John Adams, one of the strongest players in the world, and he was smashed, 5.5 to 1.5. And so at this point, we're at a point where computers are demonstrably superior to the very strongest chess players in the world. And of course, you know, the kind of question, you know, this, these this raises are things like, you know, are is chess in some sense, is that like, is the rest of human life and experience like chess? Are we going to see computers get better than humans in all sorts of other domains and sort of an exponentiating growth and expanding a universe of computer superiority? The only observation I would make is sort of a cultural one on this chess dynamic, which is that in the 70s and 80s and early 90s, chess was seen as being basically equivalent to human intelligence. I got my first job on Wall Street in the early 90s, and one of my main credentials was that I was a great chess player. And at this point, it's sort of a cool party trick, but you don't talk about it that much anymore, because we know that given that computers are better than humans, we infer, because there's a pervasive anti-AI bias, we know that therefore chess can't be that important. And it's a very different world from the world of, say, 1972, where the Cold War between the Soviet Union and the United States got reduced to a chess match between Bobby Fischer and Boris Spassky, and that was seen as sort of a culmination of what society was able to produce more intelligent people, and the way you measure that was by chess playing ability. So I'm agnostic. I don't know to what extent chess is like life, to what extent computers will get better than humans in every domain in the next few years. We have speakers here who think it will happen in the next 20, some who think it may happen in the next several hundred, some who think that it never will or never should happen. We have a whole range of different views of how this extraordinary growth in technology is going to progress in the decades ahead. Let me say a few words about our very first, and of course, even more important is the question of whether these changes are good changes or bad changes. So, especially if something like the singularity is possible and is going to happen in the next few decades, is this going to be something utopian, which will liberate people and give them freedom that we can't even imagine today? Or is this sort of a technological trap that humanity has set for itself and that will somehow all end in absolute catastrophe? And again, I think we have some very divergent views on that question. I'm looking forward to a very engaged discussion on that.